All right. Well, good morning, Missio family. It's good to be together this morning on Zoom. So I want to start this morning again with a question. Been doing that the last few weeks. And the question this morning is this. As we consider and sit in this series called How Long, O Lord, the question is this. Is it possible to bring our honest desires before God and simultaneously pray for God's will to be done? So is it possible to bring our honest desires before God and simultaneously pray for God's will to be done? As Birch mentioned in his welcome, today is Palm Sunday, which we're not going to necessarily look at directly today because we looked at the triumphal entry a few weeks ago, and we've actually been talking about and looking at Jesus's actions and his words after he entered Jerusalem. And we've been talking about it in the ways that it aligns with our series, How Long, O Lord? And we've seen over the last number of weeks how Jesus, as he entered Jerusalem, he was honest about his pain and about his lament over the city. And in that, he was holy and he was human. And we looked at his anger that he felt as the Gentiles were being kept out from worshiping him in the temple because of the money changers and the things that were taking place in their space. And he was angry about that. And again, he was holy and he was human in that reaction. And then we looked last week at Jesus cursing the fig tree that represented a people and a system that wasn't bearing the fruit that it was created for, but instead bearing corrupt fruit, and how Jesus, even in cursing, was both human and fully holy. And today, I want to look at Jesus's actions in another space that took place just a few days after the triumphal entry. This morning, we were going to look at Jesus's words and his actions in the Garden of Gethsemane, which again took place just a few days after his entry into Jerusalem and just a few days before the cross. And I want to look at this all within the context, again, of our series of How Long, O Lord, and the three biblical movements that we've been talking at. We've been talking about the fact that throughout Scripture, what we see in the midst of pain, in the midst of suffering, in the midst of longing, is that God invites us, first and foremost, to pay attention and to feel the pain that is honest and that is true to us in our humanity. And secondly, then he invites us to wait upon him in the confusing in between, the time of maybe silence or the time of pain, the time of uncertainty that often happens that we feel. And it causes us, again, to cry out, how long, O Lord, how long must me endure? And thirdly, to move to a place of allowing the old to birth the new and understanding that that's not something that we just do on our own, but it's part of the natural process in partnership with God when we live life by faith and trusting him. And today we're going to wrap up this series by looking at how all three of these are at play in the life of Christ, not just throughout his ministry, but really in these moments in the garden. And so we're going to look at Matthew 26 with you. We're going to read verses 36 to 46 through it. And I want to talk about it. But this is how Matthew records it in his gospel. He says, then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, sit here while I go over there and pray. And taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, my soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch with me. And going a little farther, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. And he came to the disciples and he found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, so could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. And again, for the second time, he went away and he prayed, my Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, your will be done. And again, he came and he found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. So leaving them again, he went away and he prayed for the third time, saying the same words again. Then he came to the disciples and he said to them, sleep and take your rest later on. See, the hour is at hand and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand. And so we get this picture of Jesus here with his disciples. And Matthew tells us it's with Peter and then the two sons of Zebedee. So that's James and John. And he's here in this place called the Garden of Gethsemane. That's just outside the city of Jerusalem, on the Mount of Olives. And the name Gethsemane literally means olive press. And so this is a garden on the Mount of Olives where a lot of olives were grown. And this garden literally means, the name means olive press, which was a contraption they would take and they would use, and they put the olives in there that they picked on this Mount of Olives, and they would turn it and they would turn it, and it would press out. It would squeeze the olives until all of the oil came out, which would be used for really beautiful cooking and preparations and all sorts of things. But this is where Jesus is, in this place called the olive press. And we see here in these very first verses in 37 and 38 that Jesus says, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death." Overall, he's saying my sadness, it's so intense that it feels like it could kill me. And here we see Jesus being squeezed like an olive in an olive press, to the point that some of the other gospels record that he was sweating like drops of blood. That this is the same Jesus acknowledging these feelings of overwhelm, of pain, of sadness, of troublesomeness, of troubledness. This is the same Jesus who we've seen in the Gospels be very calm in every other situation. This is the same Jesus who's been described by some as an unanxious presence in anxious times or in anxious systems. This is Jesus who confronted and freed a terrifying demoniac who was going around a town and terrorizing people. This is the same Jesus who calmed not just one, but multiple storms at sea. This is Jesus who fed crowds of thousands, 4,000 and 5,000, multitudes of people who are upset and angry and hungry and tired. He did that merely with 5 loaves and 2 fish. This is the same Jesus that when the sisters came to us weeping and traumatized that their brother Lazarus was dead, this is the same Jesus that calmly entered into that situation and spoke life. And now here we see Jesus admitting to being greatly distressed. We've been talking over the last few weeks in this series of How Long, O Lord. One of our questions has been, what does it mean to be human and to be holy? Are those oxymorons, or are those two things mutually exclusive, or can that happen? And what we've looked at and seen is that those two things indeed, as we live by faith and with a healthy spirituality, with a healthy faith and a healthy emotional spirituality, that it's those two things are totally normal. To be human and to be holy and to feel the full range of emotion. And here in Gethsemane, we see that Jesus experiences that. He experiences this full range of human emotions, and he shares it with his friends in a fully human and a fully holy way. You know, if one of the things I've been thinking about reading this is that as I've been going through my own process of learning how to be honest about my feelings, to sit with God in the uncomfortable in between, and to allow God birth something new out of these experiences, it's that expressing sadness and fear, it's actually the first step for me to learn how to release control. That being honest about my emotions is the first step in expressing honestly what's going on inside of me, and viewing and understanding that not as a sign of weakness, but as a sign of humanity and a sign of humility, which ultimately then is a sign of holiness, a sign of being like Christ. And also that it's an invitation to let others in. It's an invitation to let others to see me and to know me and to walk and do life with me. And we see Jesus do that here, that he went away to this place called the oil press, not alone, but he went to that place with his three closest companions, and with Peter, with James, and with John. He invited them into that place of his deepest sorrow, his deepest anguish, the place where he is troubled more than anything else. And we see here that in that, Jesus understands what it's like to experience sorrow so heavy that it feels like it's pressing the life out of you. You know, in this series and talking about How Long, O Lord, what we've had to acknowledge is that sometimes How Long, O Lord, is personal. Sometimes it's communal. Sometimes it's because of what's going on inside of me in my own life, or sometimes it's because of what others have done to me. And sometimes it has actually nothing to do with me, but it's because of what I see going on outside around me in the world. And one of the questions that maybe we ask along with that is, how can I go on in the midst of this? Jesus here again understands, and he shows us what it's like to express the deepest and heaviest weight of sorrow. even when it feels like it's pressing the life out of him. We'll talk about that a little more in a second. But in order for us to get to what Jesus is concerned with, what was bringing him sorrow, I want you to look at verse 39 with me. It says, going a little further, he fell on his face and he prayed and he said, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but what you will. And so this begs the question of asking, what is this cup? What's this cup that Jesus speaks of? Because it's this cup that he says is causing, or in him saying it, we understand this is what's causing him this great anguish. If you don't understand what this cup is, we need to look actually at the Old Testament, at Jeremiah. The prophet Jeremiah in chapter 25, he wrote in verses 15 and 16 about the cup and what this means. In Jeremiah, we're told, it says, thus the Lord, the God of Israel, said to me, take from my hand this cup of the wine of wrath and make all the nations to whom I send you drink it. They shall drink and stagger and be crazed because of the sword that I am sending among them. See, in Jeremiah's time, God spoke to him, and God speaks to him of this cup in the hand of God that's filled with the wine of wrath against the sin of the nations. And that God was justly going to pour out wrath upon the nations because of the ways that they had turned from him, the ways that they had turned away from his love and gone their own way, decided not to be obedient and instead to do everything except for what God had called them to do. And I believe this is what Jesus is referring to. Jesus is speaking of this cup of wrath. This is what's being handed to Jesus to drink. And at some time in eternity past, I believe that the eternal Son of God covenanted with the Father to drink this cup, right? That this Jesus knew that this was coming. Jesus knew that this was the very reason and very purpose for which he came to earth. And yet, here in Gethsemane, here in this garden named oil press, we see that there's a very real human struggle going on between avoiding pain and obeying the Father. A very honest and real struggle in Christ, by Christ, of obedience and his own desires. And we see that this was so troublesome to Jesus that he not only brings it to the Father once nor twice, but we're told here that three times in verse 39, in 42, and in 44, Jesus feels the need to pray three times in Gethsemane before he reaches a sense of peace and understanding of what he's to do. And again, I think about this, and again, in my own journeys of acknowledging my feelings, sitting with God in the uncomfortable between, and getting to the place where finally God can birth something new out of the old things of my life. Often, I feel obligated to move immediately to the phrase of God, your kingdom come, your will be done, not mine. Before I linger long enough with my feelings and allow myself to truly express them to God and even in community as we see Jesus do here. Or we feel guilty for asking about what we truly want, or we wish that the things that we want to be relieved, we feel maybe as if they're merely complaints and that God doesn't want to hear them, or that again, to bring that and to feel that and to sit in that space, that it's very human, but that it's not holy enough. But what we see here is that Jesus's honest expression of the painful emotions, it's part of the process. Part of the process for him, part of the process for us, part of what God invites us and welcomes us and walks us into. And in these same verses in 39, 42, 44, we see that Jesus prays. He says, nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. My Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, may your will be done. We see here finally that Jesus was actually able, after wrestling, he was able to surrender what he wanted and what he desired in the moment for the sake of what he longed for more. While Jesus felt the pain of his humanity, Jesus also remembered the calling and the purpose on his life. He had a greater longing that superseded his desire to avoid the pain or to endure the judgment of God. His greater longing was to see God's plan and his purposes fulfilled in his own life and in the world. But it's the honest expression of his painful emotions and his honest wrestling that had to be part of the process, that had to be part of his own transformation, if you will. And we see that Jesus, though, he didn't end his prayer just by acknowledging his feelings. He ends by trusting in God. He ends by conforming his will to the Father's, even in the midst of this darkest time. As I mentioned earlier, that this cry of how long, O Lord, that we've been talking about, sometimes it is personal, sometimes it's communal, sometimes, again, it's because of what's going on inside of me, other times it's because of what's being done to me, other times it, again, has nothing even to do with me, but it has to do with the world. It has to do with what's going on around me. And it's sometimes, again, accompanied with the question of, how can I go on? How can I get through this? How can I do this? See, I believe what Jesus shows us here is that the answer to the question of how can I go on, the answer is in being in relationship with the Father. See, as I look at this passage and I think about this and I see what Jesus is doing, and again, understanding this context, what is the cup? What is the agreement that he had already made with the Father in eternity past and how he wrestles here honestly now? We see that the invitation to acknowledge the inevitability of suffering, the invitation to surrender and to drink the cup that's handed to us, the invitation to step forward into a path of obedience, it always comes within the context of relationship with God. It always comes to us, it's always given to us within this picture of walking with and surrendering to a good and a personal God. This brings us back to consider and even to see how Jesus here, I believe, is wrestling with what we've talked about a number of weeks, that the self-orientation versus the God orientation. The self-orientation of always starting with this place of how am I doing? What am I doing? What do I need to do? Versus the God orientation that starts with God's love, God's grace, God's faithfulness, God's goodness towards you and for you. The invitation, again, to acknowledge suffering, to surrender, and to step into obedience is always given within the context of relationship, of trusting God and believing that he will be with us, believing that he is for us, even in the midst of suffering. God's invitation, I don't believe, ever to us, and I don't see it here in Jesus, it's never just to simply grit our teeth, nor to clench our fists, nor to just to push on, believing that we've got to do this alone or without help. But believing and understanding that God, that someone is with us, that God is with us. For Jesus, it was understanding that the Father was with him, that the Spirit was empowering him. And for us today, it's knowing that Christ is with us, knowing and seeing that what he went through, that he understands, that he relates, he empathizes, he knows the human experience, and he knows the struggle and the challenge of walking in the obedience of holiness. But for us to understand and know that Jesus is with us, that his Spirit is in us, even when we don't always feel it, even when we don't always see him, even when we don't always sense that he is with us. We see Jesus work through this, finally to come to this place in verse 46 where he says, "Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand." See, Jesus shows us, I believe, that in order for us to truly live, we need to actually die. We need to die to ourselves. And he invites us to go with him. See, Jesus knew that we needed to die before we can ever, ever live. And he provided the means for that in dying for us. You know, we see here Jesus wrestle with the Father and ask the question, "Father, if there's any other way, if you can take this cup, please do it." And we know that the Father's resounding answer to him actually was no, there is no other way. This is where Jesus can say, "I am the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life. There's no one comes to the Father but through me." If there was another way, Jesus would not have had to go through and endure and drink the cup of wrath. He wouldn't have had to wrestle here because there would have been another option. But no, the clear answer that the Father gives is no, there is no other way. And Jesus models this for us. He shows us, again, the full range of healthy human emotion and struggle with holiness and understanding that it is possible at times for us to have our human desires and to pray for God's will to come. And ultimately, for us to fully identify with Jesus in his death, in this process, is the only way for us to experience true life. That just as for Jesus here, the only way to life was through death, that so for us, it's the same. When I think about this and think about the application of this to my life, I think of the Apostle Paul's words in Galatians, where in Galatians chapter 2 and in verse 20, he writes and he says, "I've been crucified with Christ, and is no longer I who live, but it's Christ who lives in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me." when I see this and I think about this, even in the context of suffering and of pain and asking the question again, how long, O Lord? I see Paul speaking here in a metaphor that actually isn't really a metaphor. Paul was not literally on Jesus's cross with him, but Jesus's death in literal history was just as much Paul's crucifixion as it was Christ's. And when we believe that same, that we're saying that we weren't on the cross with Jesus, but Jesus's literal death in history that we're celebrating this week was just as much my crucifixion as it was Christ's. Just as much ours as it was Christ's when we look to him in faith. Again, church, that's what we're preparing to celebrate this week. And that's what we say we believe as Christians when we say we believe in this concept of a substitutionary atonement, right? Of Jesus dying as a substitute in my place. It's a metaphor that really isn't a metaphor. It's saying he died in the place where I should have been, and I now, by faith, align with that death and say that death is mine as well. That he died and he paid the price for my salvation and my freedom. And now in my humanity, I get to wrestle with what does it look like to live that out? And how do I and where am I being called to choose to die to myself in order to experience his life new within me over and over again? That's what it means to wrestle and to be honest and to sit in the confusing in between and to come to this place of allowing God to love the old to birth the new. And here's the good news in this. Here's the beauty of this. Jesus drank the cup of wrath, every last drop of it, so that you and I never have to. Jesus drank that cup of wrath so that you and I could drink the cup of salvation, the cup of life, the cup of the new covenant forever in the greater garden that is to come. The promise here and the invitation of going through this whole process of being honest about our pain and our suffering, inviting others into it, sharing honest humanity humbly and graciously, wrestling with God, sitting with God in the confusing in between, even in the times when he seems distant and it seems dark. Coming to this place, the way that the old is birthed out of the new, is coming to this place of, again, believing and understanding that Jesus fully drank the cup of wrath for you and I, and we're never going to have to. That's the good news. That's the grace of Christ. That's the grace of God and the love poured out and shown that we celebrate this week as we head into Good Friday and into Easter. That we get to drink the cup of salvation for eternity through following Jesus and learning how to surrender, learning how to wrestle, learning how to walk in this process. Finally coming to the place of believing that in the midst of the suffering, in the midst of it all, in the midst of the crying out of how long, O Lord, believing that we've been invited into a relationship with a good and gracious God whose love is unfailing, whose mercies are new every morning, who is great in faithfulness. You know, Missio, today we will actually celebrate communion together, both as it's the last Sunday of the month and also as we prepare for entering into Holy Week together. But I want to invite you to consider two questions before we do communion, before we do worship that lead us into communion. As we've gone through this series talking about how long, O Lord, I've been asking you questions to think about and to wrestle with. And now again, at the beginning, at the start of Holy Week, I want to give you these two questions that I invite you honestly to consider. How might your own life right now be more characterized by Jesus's words, not as I will, but as you will? What's the thing in life right now that is causing you, again, whether it's internal or external, that's causing you to cry out in a manner of saying, how long, O Lord? And looking to God for answers in this. And how in the process of that, how might God actually be shaping your will to align with his? Because you're willing to recognize that your natural inclination to the pain, to the suffering, to the things that are causing you to say, how long, O Lord, that you have a natural response, that you want to run, that you want to hide, that you want to react, that you want to escape, that you want to medicate, that you want to do whatever it is that you want to do. But as we've talked about this and seen, that's actually not going to lead to life. But what will lead you to life is following Christ's example and then receiving the grace of Christ. And remember again that he drank the full cup of wrath. So you'll never experience that. But you have the choice and the freedom to drink of the new covenant of life by allowing yourself, your will, to be more surrendered, to be more characterized by what we see here in Jesus, where he says, not what I desire, Father, but ultimately what you will. So in this season, how is God shaping your will to align with his? This week, as we enter into Holy Week, I want to invite you to wrestle with that, to think about that, to consider honestly, how is God inviting you to surrender within the context of your relationship with him in order that you might experience greater life? You see, right before Jesus entered the garden, and right before that, he was foretold Peter's denial, Jesus sat with his disciples and he engaged in and enjoyed what we understand as the Last Supper. And in Matthew records it this way in verses 26 to 29, he says, "Now as they were eating together," this is Jesus sitting and eating with his disciples, including the one who would betray him, including the one who would deny him, including all of them who at some point in the coming week would turn from him and run from him and deny even knowing him. It says, as Jesus was eating with them, he took the bread, and after blessing, he broke it and he gave it to these disciples. He gave it to these very ones who were wrestling with, what does it mean for me to be holy and for me to be human? Who are wrestling with, what does it mean for me to have my own desires and also to desire the will of God? He said to them, "Take it and eat it. This is my body." And he took a cup. And when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink of it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, the new covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink again of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." See, this is the cup, church, that we get to drink. Because of Christ's willingness to drink the cup of wrath, we get the invitation to drink the cup of life, the cup of forgiveness, the cup of freedom, the cup that leads us into a humanity that is more holy than one that is not. And so in a moment, we're going to worship. Kelly's going to lead us in a song. And after he leads us in that, he's going to invite us to take the cup, whatever it is that you've got prepared at home, that represents this cup of life, this cup of Christ's blood poured out for you for the forgiveness of your sins. And he's going to invite you to take then the bread that represents Christ's body that was broken for you, that represents his body on the cross for you in your place. And I invite you this morning again to wrestle even with that question as we worship and as we take communion and ask the Lord, God, what is it in this season? How in this season are you inviting me to align my will more with yours, in order that even in the midst of all of the things that cause me to cry out in pain, how long, that God, you would show me how you're working, how you're present with me, how you're loving me, and how you're leading me to be more engaged in life with you. So, Missy, I invite you to worship with us as Kelly leads us.